This is KUNM. I'm Marisa DeMarco. Police shootings around the country are causing protests and outcry, and video footage from many of these shootings is shedding new light on the moments before a person is killed by law enforcement. Here in New Mexico, a video ignited demonstrations and drew national attention after two Albuquerque Police Department officers shot and killed James Boyd in March of 2014. They're now on trial for murder. APD's Patrick Hernandez was one of the first officers who responded to a call from a concerned resident about a man camping in the foothills of the Sandia Mountains in Albuquerque. His testimony centered on why he did not shoot James Boyd, even after the homeless camper drew knives. Hernandez said it was the first time in 10 years as an open space officer that someone had pulled a knife on him, and he described what was in his mind in that moment.
I actually could see my weapon firing. I could see the impact that might have had.
But Hernandez could see something else, too, the scrutiny and media attention that would come from taking the shot.
And even image of my face on the TV went through my mind, being in the media spotlight, trying to avoid that, just to prevent my family and other people having to go through that.
So he moved away from Boyd, he testified, and over the course of the next several hours, more and more police arrived until there were 19 officers at the base of the mountain. In her opening statement, Special Prosecutor Randy McGinn listed the lethal weapons the officers had.
So there were 19 firearms out there. There were, in addition, 9 semi-automatic rifles with 709 rounds of ammunition.
And all the non-lethal options.
There were 7 handheld tasers with a range of 15 feet. There were 2 taser shotguns with a range of up to 100 feet. There were 3 beanbag shotguns out there, 10 cans of mace on the officers, more than 2 knives, and 2 trained police dogs.
And Boyd, she said, had just 2 knives. As the standoff unfolded that day, Boyd took those knives out of his pockets and then put them away repeatedly, she said, and he rambled, saying things that hinted at his mental illness, that he could see in the dark, for instance. McGinn emphasized to the court that Boyd knew he was in danger.
APD is standing by to kill me. And then he also says, I came up here to watch dinner and a movie and get back to work tomorrow. They came up here with their guns drawn. I'm under assault right now. Look at that.
You got 3 officers walking up right to you.
Lawyer Sam Bregman is representing former officer Keith Sandy, who shot Boyd using a rifle.
Those 3 officers are going, get on the ground! Get on the ground! Get on the ground! Get on the ground! 4 times. Does he surrender? No. Mr. Boyd thinks it's appropriate. Let's pull out some knives.
The police video of the shooting shows Boyd turning away when he was shot, but the defense is working to change the narrative, saying that in the moments before Boyd died, he was not backing down but getting ready to attack.
There will be no evidence that he was surrendering by pulling out 2 knives. The evidence will show that's not surrendering. That's, I want to stab somebody.
Defense attorneys are also hitting on the idea that you can't use perfect 20/20 hindsight to retroactively weigh the calls police have to make in high-pressure situations. But expert witness Jeff Noble, a former deputy police chief from California, told the jury that this situation wasn't like that.
There was a lot of time. There was time to communicate. There were supervisors there. There were people to ask questions of, to get input from. This was not a split-second type situation for them where, like, somebody's jumping out at them and they're suddenly making a decision.
Dominique Perez and Sandy are expected to take the stand in their own defense. Questions about their motivations and behavior are already in play through expert witnesses and the testimony of a detective who oversaw APD's internal investigation into the shooting. Perez and Sandy are facing up to 15 years in prison. For KUNM, I'm Marisa DeMarco in Albuquerque. This is KUNM. I'm Marisa DeMarco. 2 former Albuquerque police officers are facing murder charges for what could be the first time here. The effectiveness of the SWAT team in dangerous situations has come into play during the trial, and police who were there the day James Boyd was shot in 2014 have been testifying in court. It's the first time the public's heard directly from many of these officers. The police went out that Sunday because a neighbor had called saying a homeless man was camping in the foothills of the Sandia Mountains. The standoff lasted hours, and it became apparent from the things the camper was saying that he had a mental illness. James Boyd was eventually shot and killed by police, and in the days after, people were asking, where were the officers specially trained to talk to people in crisis? It turns out an Albuquerque Police Department officer who was known for doing just that was called to the scene and spent more than an hour trying to de-escalate the situation. Officer Michael Monette said he didn't think Boyd understood why police were there in the first place.
He didn't think he was causing any harm.
He testified that he'd spoken to people with mental illness hundreds of times. Boyd took his folding knives out of his pockets, but Monette said he talked him into putting them away and keeping his hands visible.
Just being persistent, kind of just talking to him, say, hey, you know, you don't need to have your weapons out. Can you put them away? Can you put them down?
He said he could see Boyd's emotions spike and plummet as he was talking to him. And he testified that according to APD procedure, it's okay to let people in crisis vent their emotions, to find out what's bothering them, and to avoid topics that set them off. But Boyd was scared, Monette said.
I believe he's afraid of us having the weapons out, having the weapons pointed at him. He was afraid of getting shot or some use of force being used on him.
Even though it's protocol for the officer who established rapport to keep talking to a person who is in crisis, Monette said a sergeant pulled him away from Boyd and told him to help divert people away from the standoff instead. From his new post, he could hear the shots that killed Boyd.
I heard the flashbang and then heard the shots. You could just kind of get a sense of what's going on from the sound.
That sergeant who sent Monette down the mountain, that was Jason Carpenter, who also took the stand in the trial. He was making the calls on how to deal with Boyd that afternoon at first.
He was not safe for the community.
Carpenter testified that they weren't having a lot of success with Boyd.
If we just packed up and walked away, we wouldn't be doing our job in protecting the community. I was also thinking, at very least, he may need a mental health evaluation.
Carpenter called for a taser shotgun, for someone from the gang unit who could operate one to come to the scene. That's when one of the defendants, Keith Sandy, arrived. It was his day off, and he wasn't on the gang unit, but he responded anyway. Here's Sergeant Carpenter again.
You know, every officer and supervisor, you want to resolve it. You do. So you're trying.
And even though Carpenter told SWAT officers that everything was under control, they showed up anyway.
And then when there's, for me at the time, you know, there's no resolve. It's like, you can't predict the future. You're not sure what's going to happen.
When the Department of Justice released the results of its years-long investigation into the Albuquerque police, it called out SWAT overall for a lack of discipline and control that led to unreasonable deadly force. The Fed said SWAT failed to help during dangerous situations and that bad on-scene oversight was part of the problem. James Fox was the sergeant of the SWAT team during the time period the DOJ was investigating APD's high number of shootings. Fox said on the stand he was worried about the situation with Boyd that day, about the terrain and coming darkness, and that's why he went to the scene.
I knew that it was a Sunday afternoon, and I knew on Sunday afternoons with nice weather there were going to be many people enjoying the trails up and down there on that area. So I was concerned.
Fox sent SWAT officer Dominique Perez, the second defendant, up the hill to provide cover for other officers. Fox said on the stand he regrets that decision, that Perez was a measured and dependable officer with no citizen complaints in his career. But defense attorney Luis Robles asked Sergeant Fox to explain the wisdom of his decision.
And knowing what you know today, you would agree with me that despite all of this, you made the right decision to pick the right officer to do the job.
Yes, if I had to do it all over again, I would have to call him again.
More police officers are expected to testify this week during the ongoing trial, including Sandy and Perez, who are charged with second-degree murder and facing up to 15 years in prison. For KUNM, I'm Marisa DeMarco. This is KUNM. I'm Marisa DeMarco. For the first time in memory, two former Albuquerque police officers are facing second-degree murder charges for an on-the-job shooting, and their trial is offering a rare glimpse into the mindset of law enforcement in tense situations. Former officer Dominique Perez took the stand in his own defense on Tuesday. The video at the center of this trial is familiar to people all over the country. It showed police shooting James Boyd, who was homeless and who'd shown signs of mental illness. The video was released by the Albuquerque Police Department days after he died, and it went viral, igniting protests and criticism. That footage came from SWAT officer Dominic Perez's own helmet camera. In court, he reviewed it with his lawyer, explaining his thinking, his role that day, his job providing cover for other officers. Perez said he approached quietly with his rifle, negotiating the side of a hill at the base of the Sandia Mountains. Boyd stood on an outcropping of rocks.
As I'm walking up, I don't want Mr. Boyd to pay attention to me. I want him to stay interacting with those officers, and I don't want to be hampering anything that they have going on with him.
On the video, it looks like Boyd is finally ready to come down after a standoff that lasted hours. Here's Perez attorney Luis Robles.
You would agree with me that you watched Mr. Boyd pick up his belongings, correct?
Yes, sir.
What did that tell you about whether Mr. Boyd was surrendering?
It didn't give me any indication that he was surrendering. He hadn't relinquished his knives.
James Boyd assured the police that he was not a murderer. Officers deployed non-lethal force, a distraction device or flashbang, a taser shotgun, a dog. Then the canine officer takes a couple steps up the incline toward Boyd, who pulls out his knives.
In my perception, it looked like he was going to come straight down on the officers in a stabbing motion because the way he pulled the weapon systems out, or excuse me, the knives out from his pockets and then took that aggressive fighting stance.
The other defendant, former officer Keith Sandy, fired three bullets, and just a hair later, Perez fired another three.
You understand today that you ended up shooting Mr. Boyd in the back, correct?
As it turns out, I did. Yes, sir.
Perez explained that he was taking in so much stimuli in those moments, and there was a lot to consider all at once as he moved his index finger onto the trigger.
So as I move from when I made the decision to fire to make sure that I was not going to injure my other officers and moved back, in that fraction of a second, Mr. Boyd had turned.
It was Special Prosecutor Randy McGinn's turn. She did something kind of unorthodox. She didn't just question Perez.
It is true that you did not plan or create the failed arrest attempt that happened in the foothills in March of 2014, did you, sir?
I had no dealings with the plan, no.
And I can't tell you how sorry I am that you are the one who was sent up into a mess that some other officer created.
Sustained.
McGinn continued and confirmed with Perez that police officers are not above the law and that being a Marine, Perez served in Iraq, wasn't a free pass. Then she asked whether Perez had been trained on when homicide by a police officer is justified. For example, when someone is resisting arrest.
Mr. Boyd was never told he was under arrest, was he, sir?
Not from the time I was there.
McGinn pointed out that after the shooting, Perez wasn't treated like an ordinary murder suspect. He had a full 2 days to cool down before giving his statement, and the APD investigator who interviewed him was someone he'd worked with before.
And Detective Stone conducted a friendly interview, did he not?
It didn't appear more friendly than normal.
He let you say whatever you wanted. Did he not?
He asked the questions and I answered them.
In fact, on page 2, he said, I'm going to just give you the floor, man, and let you run through everything that you did. Isn't that what he said, sir?
I believe he did. Yes, ma'am.
The prosecution is challenging the effectiveness of the SWAT team in dangerous situations, and the defense is trying to show that James Boyd was threatening an officer and that Sandy and Perez defended him. Testimony continues this week. For KUNM, I'm Marisa DeMarco. This is KUNM. I'm Marisa DeMarco. After James Boyd was shot and killed by members of the Albuquerque Police Department, a recording emerged of one of those officers telling a colleague he was going to shoot Boyd hours before he did it. Keith Sandy is facing aggravated battery and second-degree murder charges. During much of his testimony on Wednesday, he tried to explain police culture and the banter between officers. Keith Sandy worked on the ROP, or Rope Unit. The APD's Repeat Offender Project's symbol was a noose, and the team was known for finding criminals. And because of the kinds of people the team tracked, Sandy told the court, officers got stressed.
And you can see it in a person. You can see their demeanor change. You can see their face. Their breathing will change.
Sandy had always wanted to be a rope officer, and he idolized the bosses there. Teasing was just a part of the job, and he testified that there was so much teasing, they even had a safe word for when it got too bad. It was China.
Because of the stress and because of the element of criminal in which we pursued, banter was interjected to change that focus, to kind of put some light in the situation.
From the beginning of this trial, the prosecution has worked to cast Sandy as overeager to shoot someone. He was on call the day of the standoff with James Boyd in the Sandia foothills, where the homeless man had been illegally camping in 2014. Sandy got word that they needed someone to head out to the scene with a taser shotgun, but when he found out there'd been a mistake, that they wanted someone from the gangs unit instead, Sandy went to the standoff anyway. When he pulled up, he saw a state police officer he knew who'd been sent in response to a request from Boyd. Here's defense attorney Monica Garcia.
What did he say as to why he was there?
He said he didn't know, and then he said, this guy called us. And so I responded by, this fucking lunatic. And then I said, joking, bantering with him, that because I'd been called there to shoot with the taser shotgun, I said, I'm going to shoot him with a taser shotgun here in a second.
When that audio clip circulated, there was speculation about what he'd actually said. It's kind of muffled, but media reported that Sandy possibly said he was going to shoot Boyd in the penis with a shotgun. But for the prosecution, the focus has been more on the idea that Sandy was saying he wanted to use force against Boyd before he'd reached the scene, and on how the word lunatic shows a bias against people with mental illness.
Why did you call Boyd a lunatic?
Lunatic is a word that I used during that time. I regret saying it deeply, but it wasn't directed. I wasn't even thinking about Mr. Boyd.
You still use that word frequently?
Absolutely not. I have not used it.
Special Prosecutor Randy McGinn's line of questioning at first focused on Sandy's history, how he'd been fired from the state police for double-dipping. He admitted on the stand that he wasn't proud of that. He was then hired by APD at a time when the department was trying to boost the numbers of officers on the force. Then McGinn questioned Sandy on more of the language police used that day. The canine officer Sandy was protecting told him to throw a diversionary device, a flashbang, and used an expletive to refer to Boyd.
Is that how the three of you thought of Mr. Boyd at that time?
No, ma'am.
The reason she brought up that exchange, McGinn said, was because officers are supposed to recognize when someone has mental illness, not hold them responsible for it, and not respond with anger to their taunts.
And yet that comment sounds angry.
Ma'am, to be honest with you, I did not hear. I heard banging is what I heard.
That day, the canine officer released a dog that didn't bite and then followed the dog up the hill toward Boyd. Sandy emotionally recalled those tense seconds.
And I see Mr. Boyd's hands go into his pocket. And when he did that, I tried to come up and I was trying to keep distance from Mr. Boyd.
Sandy went on to fire two bullets into Boyd's arms, and when he saw that Boyd was still standing, he fired a third. Then, he said, Boyd's gray sweatshirt fell out of the visual of his rifle sight. The other defendant, former officer Dominique Perez, also fired three shots, and Boyd later died at the hospital. The rope team has since been disbanded as part of an agreement between the city and the U.S. Department of Justice. For KUNM, I'm Marisa DeMarco. Two Albuquerque police officers were charged with second-degree murder for an on-the-job shooting for the first time in at least half a century. They were facing up to 15 years in prison for killing James Boyd, who'd been camping illegally for about a month in the foothills of the Sandia Mountains in 2014. The jury announced Tuesday evening that it was deadlocked. After hearing nearly 3 weeks of testimony and arguments, the jury deliberated for about 16 hours. And on Tuesday, they entered Judge Alyssa Hadfield's courtroom for the last time.
Juror number three, are you able to tell me what the split was with regard to second-degree murder against defendant Keith Sandy? Three guilty, nine not guilty?
Same split for former officer Dominique Perez. The jurors told Hadfield further deliberation wouldn't make a difference. They needed a unanimous decision to either convict or acquit, and they didn't have it, so it was a hung jury.
Based on this information, the court finds that there is no reasonable probability that the jury can agree and is going to conclude this proceeding by declaring a mistrial.
Court adjourned, and Keith Sandy's defense lawyer, Sam Bregman, spoke to the press.
Obviously, he wanted to be able to have a complete win, if you will, 100% walk out of here not guilty decision by the jury. That didn't happen, but 9-3 is pretty darn close.
Bregman wouldn't say how much he was paid to put on Sandy's defense. The other defendant, Perez, his wife told the Associated Press they were more than $250,000 in debt due to legal fees. Bregman said if it came down to it, though, he'd defend his client again for free.
They're going to go on. They're good people with wonderful families, and they're going to you know, pick themselves back up. I hope to God, though, that the government recognizes the weakness of this case and doesn't cost the kind of taxpayer dollars it would be to re-prosecute this again.
The state paid Special Prosecutor Randy McGinn less than $6,000 to try the case. As a news chopper circled the courthouse, she explained why she took it on.
This was to restore people's confidence that the criminal justice system can review police shooting cases. And regardless of the outcome of the verdict, cops aren't going to get a pass when they wrongfully shoot somebody here in Albuquerque anymore.
McGinn said she was struck by the amount of people behind the officers in the courtroom showing support and the empty benches on the other side of the room.
We're all on the hook for James Boyd, aren't we? I just thought if just one person had been on James Boyd's side out there, he might not have been out there on the mountain with no home to go to.
It does not seem to matter if their trainings and tactics change, if they change their hiring practices, if they lose millions of dollars in lawsuits, or if they're indicted for murder. They continue to kill citizens at a higher rate than anyone else with impunity.
That's the Southwest Organizing Project's Javier Benavides. Around 20 advocates gathered in front of the courthouse. Father Frank Quintana of Blessed Oscar Romero Catholic Community said a great city can be judged by how it cares for the weakest of its citizens. The jury's decision, he said, shows how the people of Albuquerque have long been intimidated by police.
Excessive force by the police department is a means of preemptively suppressing the people. And I think that that showed itself in the hung jury.
Now, Boyd, who had a mental illness, made threats against police officers the day he was killed. Ricky Bloom has worked in the mental health care field for more than a dozen years. She said the stigma about people with mental illness played a part in the trial.
There's always the same story of, you know, we were fearful. And the fact is that you're fearful because of your own stuff and not because there's any real threat.
There wouldn't be any question about a guilty verdict, she said, if it hadn't been police officers on trial.
No justice!
No peace!
No justice!
No peace!
Boyd's brother released a statement saying he hopes Boyd's legacy is that Albuquerque police will never again take the life of anyone without just cause. The mistrial means that the Bernalillo County District Attorney would have to retry the case to get a verdict. Raul Torres is the only candidate for that office in the 2016 election, and he released a statement saying he doesn't know yet whether he'll pursue a retrial. For KUNM, I'm Marisa DeMarco. This is KUNM. I'm Marisa DeMarco. During the murder trial of two former Albuquerque police officers who shot and killed a man with mental illness, video and audio of James Boyd ranting and threatening police officers was played by the defense. The neighbor who called the police on him took the stand to say that he was afraid of the man who was homeless and camping nearby in the Sandia foothills. But Boyd might not have had a lot of other options. Marchers walked through Civic Plaza in downtown Albuquerque the night after the jury announced it was deadlocked and the judge declared a mistrial for the former APD officers.
I've been really touched by the outpouring of support for James Boyd, just recognizing that he was a part of our community and we don't want to see anybody in our community die like that.
That's Lisa Uval of the New Mexico Coalition to End Homelessness. She says when you don't have a home, your whole life becomes public, and that means you'll have more interactions with police.
The things that you and I get to do in our homes, like sleep and eat and use the bathroom and just rest, people experiencing homelessness have to do in public many times.
The first officers who went to the scene to talk to Boyd testified during the trial that they regularly interact with people camping illegally in the wild areas in and around the city because they're homeless. Uval said the police have a tough job when they get these kinds of complaints.
The police come out and they themselves also have limited options about how they can help that person.
Uval says lots of officers are well-trained to help people who are homeless. Many officers are versed in all of the options out there. The problem, she says, is that shelters fill up and plenty of people still don't have anywhere to go. Plus, if you're a person with mental illness, she says crowded shelters might not feel safe.
The tragedy of all this is that we do know what it takes to end homelessness. People need safe housing that they can afford and supports and services to keep that housing. And we also know based on our own experience locally that when we provide that, it works.
George Mercer says the same is true for people with mental illness. He is the clinical director at Albuquerque Healthcare for the Homeless.
In our society, we have the capacity to assure that
Probably 99% of persons with mental illness have the opportunity to reach their potential and to live a good quality of life.
He's on call to take walk-ins or help people who are experiencing a mental health crisis. Most people with mental illness are not dangerous, Mercer says, and research supports that. But because of the lack of resources and support, they often don't have a lot of options. It's sleep in the foothills or under the freeway overpasses.
Or walk around all night because they're afraid to sleep because they think they're going to get robbed or they're going to get assaulted. And that's truly the life that many of those mentally ill persons lives.
Mercer says mental illness is a no-fault chronic disease, just like diabetes or cancer, but that we have stigmatized it.
There's really no justice for persons with chronic mental illness in our society.
I cannot get over the fact that at the end of the day, Mr. Boyd was shot and killed for the simple petty crime of illegally camping in the foothills outside of Albuquerque. The system simply shouldn't work that way.
Peter Simonson with the local chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union watched the trial proceedings closely. Defense attorneys zeroed in on the moment Boyd was shot and argued that he was killed because he brandished knives and presented a deadly threat to an officer near him. The prosecution pulled the lens back and looked at the bigger issues of how we want our city to be policed and how we treat people who are homeless or who have mental illness.
I think the symbolic value of this trial is immense.
It's the first time anyone can remember officers facing murder charges for an on-the-job shooting in Albuquerque, and Simonson says he hopes the trial marks the beginning of a trend where cases of officers misusing their authority are looked at more objectively.
It finally signals to the police community as well as to the community at large that officers can in fact be held accountable, not just by their own supervisors, but by the larger criminal justice system.
There's a lot of work that needs to be done, Simonson says, in making sure that police departments aren't investigating their own officers and that their close colleagues aren't responsible for bringing them to trial. For KUNM, I'm Marisa DeMarco.